Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 246 of the Last Round Podcast. Let's jump straight back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 2nd of September, from the Manchester Arena in Manchester, England on ESPN Plus. I think we each chose the wrong person here, and we were both wrong, so could be a rubber match in store. Chris Eubank Jr. gets the 10th round TKO over Liam Smith. Smith was down in the 4th and the 10th round, which ultimately led to the loss, obviously, in the 10th round. I think we each picked Liam Smith just because he looked so good in the first fight. And Liam Smith has been looking, ever since his loss to Canelo, kind of, if you look at it even that further back, Smith has been, it looks like he found like a second gear. He's been really good in his subsequent fights after the Canelo fight all those years ago. And it looks like he's gotten, like, better. So it was interesting. I was like, oh, you know, Liam Smith has all the tools to beat him again. Well, you answer me this, Mike. Chris Eubank Jr. gets the win. Was the X Factor his new trainer, Brian McIntyre, BOMAC, who also trains Terrence Crawford?
Oh, that was it? Sorry, I thought there was going to be another part to the question.
Oh, no. Is that the X factor? What do you think?
No. No offense, but what can you teach him in 4 weeks? And taking nothing away from BOMAC, you know, like he has a very good stable of fighters, but I think Terrence Crawford could be trained by me or you and probably still be a world champion. I think he's just one of those generational talents that just has a very good boxing IQ, you know, just a really good, well-rounded fighter, kind of like a Tyson Fury, someone like that. I don't think BOMAC really did a lot. I think, unfortunately, taking nothing away from Chris Eubank Jr.'s performance, you know, I think it was quite open that Liam Smith, it was injured in the summer. The fight got rearranged. He had a bad back, piled on the weight. His coach didn't want him to take the fight on September 2nd because he didn't feel that he would physically be there. He had to lose around 42 pounds. He stepped into the ring under pressure from Boxer and stuff like that, supposedly, that who said, like, hey, we need to do it September 2nd or the fight's going to get called off. You're going to miss a payday. Liam Smith agreed to it, rightly or wrongly, steps into the ring, pretty much a defeated man. You could just see the performance from last fight to this fight was completely different. And unfortunately, it is down to a combination of that, you know, having a bad back, couldn't train, obviously just piled on the weight. And then, you know, pretty much did a fat camp and he was you know, half the man he was in the first fight. But, you know, taking nothing away from Chris Eubank Jr., he still did what he had to do on the night, and it was a good performance for him, and it's going to give us some, you know, really good fights probably later down the line. And, you know, I imagine it's going to be, you know, Eubank Jr. against Conor Benn, which will obviously be huge in terms for, you know, the British fight fans over there. So, you know, that's good. You just kind of feel sorry for Liam Smith that, you know, the boxing world is like that, you know, and they had dates to fill, and unfortunately he had to, you know, choose either go in there, maybe not at 100% and, you know, risk it, or does he miss out on a huge payday? Because, you know, these TV contracts, they need dates. They need dates filled, and I know that's unfortunately the way of the world.
If you think about it, Liam Smith was in one of those fighter positions where he's already lost in his career. It's kind of a win-win if you kind of look at it that way, because he was already up 1-0. He won the first fight. So he loses the second fight, but obviously people are going to say, hey, they're tied. We want to see a third fight. So there's a third payday right there. So, you know, like you said, yeah, he had like a fat camp and he had to lose, I think they said what? 40 something pounds, right? That's a lot. That's a lot. But, you know, I'm sure his team talked to him and like, hey, look, just give it a shot. You know, like, you've already beat him once. So even if you lose, it'll turn into a trilogy and you'll get another payday out of it. I'm sure they had that conversation, just like a lot of fighters who have been in these types of situations have had with their team, especially when they already have losses on their record. So, I mean, is it really that detrimental? I mean, yeah, no fighter wants to lose, but is it really that detrimental to Liam Smith and his career when he was already up 1-0? So now it's a tie game in a sense, and they've each won one. And whether Eubank goes on to fight Conor Benn or whatever, which that fight seems to kind of get some more publicity now after this. Eventually, these two are going to fight again in the rubber match, right? And that's another payday.
I mean, you know
it's true. You know they're going to do it.
I'm going to go with no, because
what?
If it was the other way around, yes. But Chris Eubank Jr. is the bigger name. And unfortunately, the people that he named probably bring more money than Liam Smith does, even though they're tied at 1-1, like you said. Conor Benn, Kell Brook, Triple G are all bigger purses. You know, even with Kell Brook being in retirement, coming back out, you know, not been looking great in his last few performances before he retired. Obviously, he beat Amir Khan, but Amir Khan was a shell of his former self. Yeah, Liam Smith, I think, is probably the least payday. The purse for that is probably less than fighting all three of those guys. So I think, you know, if you're Eubank Jr., you take that victory and you just run off. You know, you don't come back and fight him again, because if he gets back in there with Liam Smith and, you know, Liam Smith's fully recuperated, it could be the first fight all over again. And you're going to risk a purse against, you know, like a popular fighter like Kell Brook or a hugely popular fighter like Triple G? Probably not.
I agree with that. I don't think Eubank Jr. is obviously going to go straight back into the rubber match in a trilogy with Liam Smith. I definitely agree with that. But what I'm saying is it'll happen eventually. Eubank is going to try to go the money, obviously, like a lot of fighters. He's going to try to go the money route, get a Triple G payday, Conor Benn. You know, he's going to try to hit those before. And Liam Smith, I'm assuming he'll try to stay busy as well. But whether they each fight three or four fights subsequent to this and they each win two and they lose one, or they win one and they lose two, or whatever, they can always come back together and sell the marketing of, hey, well, me and you, we split two fights. I won one, you won one. So this is the rubber match to see who's the best. Eventually, they're going to come back to it. You're right. Eubank is the bigger name, so he's going to try to go to the bigger money fights right now with the momentum that he has on his side now. But I feel like eventually these two will fight in a rubber match again. Look at Pacquiao and Marquez. They fought each other like four times in the span of like 8-9 years, you know, like, or, you know, like 8 years or something like that. Like, I could see that. I mean, it might not be 8 years, but I can see them doing that, you know. And if you think about it, like, how many fighters could you name legitimately who could draw a sizable crowd in the UK, in Britain or wherever? British fighters. Who could draw, you know? And I feel like Eubank and even Smith to an extent is on that short list. Am I wrong? Am I pissing off some of our English listeners? You tell me, Mike, what do you think?
No. If you're talking like a good sizable crowd, like a, you know, 7,000-10,000 seater. Yeah, you're looking at like obviously the Smith brothers in like the Liverpool area would draw, you know, even Kell Brook, Sheffield area, you know, Josh Warrington, guys like that, you know, in their hometowns or in, you know, close to their hometowns, they'll all draw. Eubank Jr. And that's why, you know, like we said, like the Eubank Jr. Conor Benn one, because they're both draws. You know, you put that together, there seems to be a little bit of spite between them. Then you've got the history between the fathers. It's just a recipe for success for Eddie Hearn, isn't it? It's a recipe for a great payday for those guys.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Eddie Hearn, I think he tweeted about this fight. He tweeted about Eubank Ben. He's over the moon because now he has something to sell again. He's like, oh, this is great, because he has some momentum going back into that fight now. So I'm sure he's the happiest guy in the world right now, because he can revisit that fight and it could, like, I mean, do you think people would still show up for that fight now, especially now, Eubank Ben, or Ben Eubank, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, because they're both, so far they've both been doing it in the ring, but they also have very, very different personas. You know, when you see Conor Ben, he's always like turned up to like 200%. You say the wrong thing and like he'll snap and go off at you. You know, and then you've got Chris Eubank, who kind of like walks around with that air of arrogance that he's above everybody else. So yeah, I think the press conferences, the fight week, the weigh-in, I think is going to be golden. You know, it's going to be great for us to watch as fans and stuff like that. So I think I think the pay-per-view will do, you know, really well. We're just going to wait to see where it's going to be. You know, hopefully it's going to be in the UK, or is it going to be over in Saudi Arabia, you know, due to Conor Ben still going through some legal situations with, you know, the UK, who don't really want to, you know, sanction him and stuff like that. So I know they've appealed originally, obviously the ban got like overturned. They said that, you know, technically you can't ban him because it wasn't one of your tests. And I know that obviously the UK, the British Board of Boxing, sorry, have actually appealed that. So that's going to be interesting to see where the fight, you know, ends up, because, you know, we're probably not going to see AJ Fury, right, if that gets made in the UK. So at least give us, you know, Conor Ben and Eubank Jr. so the fight fans can enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, where do you see, if you had to predict, where does Eubank go for his next fight? Are we talking about Conor Ben, Kell Brook?
Triple yeah, I G? Think I think the time is probably right. You know, pardon me, whether it ends up in the UK or not, I think all roads lead to Eubank Ben.
Do you think he would, if he had an offer of Triple G and Ben on the table, do you think he would still go Ben? Because Ben's a smaller fighter.
It's a good question. I think you could technically go, you could probably go Triple G and then come back to Ben. Ben would always be there, right? Whereas if you tried to go Conor Ben, lost to Conor Ben, and then try to go Triple G would be like, well, why am I fighting you? You just lost to Conor Ben. He's not won anything. Whereas yeah. if you go the other way around, you know, you can always say, like, go up, fight Triple G, you know, who's one of the best in the world, right? You lose to him, it's not that hard a loss, right? You know, when you look at his resume and what he's done in his career, then you can kind of drop back down and fight Conor Ben, you know, straight after.
Yeah.
You know, and still, it'll still attract a good crowd just due to the fact, the spite between them both, the buildup would be immense.
Yeah. I that's an interesting predicament he would be in if Triple G and... I mean, I think Triple G is like... I really don't know what he's waiting for. I know what he's waiting. He's just... He's semi-retired. He said he's not retired, but he's just kind of like, he's made so much money and, you know, there's not... I don't think boxing is really his... at the front of his mind anymore. So he's just waiting to see, like, oh, let's just see if... I think he's waiting, like, when he gets bored of not being in the ring anymore or training, that's when he's going to come back. Because he said he's not retired. He still wants to fight. But he's made so much money and he has such a good life and, you know, everything. I think he's just kind of like, there's no rush here. You know, if there's something that's enticing, I'll come back. And, you know, maybe it's a Eubank fight, but would Triple G go to the UK? Because I feel the fight would be a lot bigger in the UK, but would they make more money in the US? Maybe in Southern California?
I think they're both kind of similar now in terms of where Triple G is in his career and where Eubank has and what Eubank has done his entire career. They're just looking for the biggest fights for the biggest money, right? I think especially right. with Triple G being like 40 or 41, I think maybe even now.
I think he's older than that.
He's maybe even 42. I think he's just looking for that last big purse, probably against someone that's not a huge hitter where he's going to get, you know, could possibly get hurt, right? Because he's, you know, he's in his 40s now. So I mean, he's looking for probably like a Saudi Arabia payday. I'm sure his money guys, his advisors are probably reaching out to Saudi Arabia like, hey, Triple G's a huge name. Let's get him in there, retirement fight, something like that. So where he can... you know, just make one last person kind of like sail off into the sunset, you know, and he deserves it. Look at all the fight nights we've had. And, you know, he was kind of one of the guys that got a lot of people into boxing probably over the last 10 years, because he was always going in there and just taking people out. He was you know, great TV. Nobody managed to convert a lot of the Mexican fans who dropped Canelo to follow him. That says something, right?
Yeah, if you think about it, in the last decade, who's really kind of grabbed a hold of a section of a fan base, and in this case, Latino fans and Mexican fans, it's been Triple G. You know, but it also helped that he was associated with Canelo for all these years. So, you know, there was like fans of Canelo who were just mad the fight wasn't happening. They would watch Triple G. Like, it's just like in a semi-related way, David Benavidez is kind of getting the Canelo rub the last couple of years. There's so many people who aren't even boxing, they're casual fans, who know David Benavidez because they hear his name associated with Canelo. Like, oh, when is he going to... Like, I've had people who don't even watch boxing. They watch, you know, they're casual fans. They watch the big fights, and they've asked me, hey, when's Canelo fighting Benavidez? And I'm still surprised that people know who that is. You know, like, Benavidez is a big name to us, you know, in the sport, but he hasn't really crossed over into that mainstream name yet. But he's getting there because of the association with Canelo. It's just like any fighter, any big fighter, like De La Hoya, Pacquiao, Mayweather, Canelo now, Mike Tyson and all that. The guys who have some type of relation to possibly giving that marquee fighter a good fight or possibly beating that fighter gets mentioned on mainstream platforms. Like Stephen A. Smith, he talks about David Benavidez. Those ESPN shows reach casual sports fans. So people are like, oh, who's this David Benavidez guy? He's the next guy to beat the king in Canelo. You know, it's the same thing. You know, it's just like every generation, every decade has a name that gets a lot of publicity from the association to the marquee fighter.
It's crazy that he did it as well, because he's not British. He's not American. He's
Triple
not Mexican.
G.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
To transcend to all of those fan bases and be huge in all of those countries when he's from Kazakhstan.
I think it helped for somebody like Triple G that he had a Mexican trainer, Abel Sanchez. He fought how you want to describe as Mexican style. You know, he went after people and he knocked everybody out. So obviously knockouts sell. It works. And then in his interviews, he came off very personable. You know, people knew, like, he didn't really speak English, but he tried to speak English. So people kind of found it like, oh, that's, you know, he's trying. And then he would try to say like stuff in Spanish, you know, and he get that a section of the fan base like, oh, yeah, he's trying. And, you know, it made it work, man. It was a perfect storm for him. It was a perfect storm. He hit the scene at the perfect time because the guy who's been the biggest star in the sport was in and around his weight class. So he was able to be associated with his name, you know, and then they ended up fighting three times or whatever over the years. So yeah, it worked out. And I think Benavidez is kind of in that same realm right now with Canelo, just cause he's got the name association with Canelo. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but yeah, I think Eubank, I don't know. I'd be really interested to see. I think Eddie Hearn's going to try to make Conor Benn first if he can, but it'd be interesting to see if both fighters are on the table, Triple G and Conor Benn, which way Eubank would go. So that's definitely interesting. Also on the card, Frazier Clark gets the technical decision in the sixth round over Dave Allen. Clark was deducted 2 points for low blows, actually, but still got the victory. What'd you think about Frazier Clark's low blows and his eventual victory?
He didn't look good.
Uh-oh.
Against a Dave Allen who came in looking a little bit heavy, shall we say. Somebody that Frazier Clark, really, with the amateur experience that he's had and stuff like that, should really be blowing away. He's, you know, coming into the pro ranks, he's not setting people alight, you know. Looking at like what Joe Joyce did and, you know, Anthony Joshua did and stuff like that, you know, other heavyweights that have come in with, you know, amateur experience and then, you know, turn to the pros, he's miles behind, absolutely miles behind. I don't see so far what the amount of money that they've invested in him, and you know, kind of the fanfare that he got when he was turning pro and stuff like that. Don't see it at all. And is he going to be able to change that much? You know, he's what, like 33, 34, something like that. Came to the pros obviously a little bit later because he did, you know, several cycles in the amateurs, and I just don't see it. Don't see it at all. So
he hasn't won you over yet. I could see that.
Definitely not. Yeah, I don't see. In British level, if that, I think Fabio Wardley would smoke him, to be honest with you, at the minute for the British heavyweight title. And that's exactly why I think Boxer pulled him out of those purse bids, you know, several weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people know that's what happens. It's the politics of the sport, definitely. And then we got some upcoming big fights that we'll just touch on that are upcoming within the next maybe 2-3 months. So Saturday, the 23rd of September from the Wembley Arena, Zili Zhang. I know I'm saying that wrong. It's like Zili Zhang or something like that. Big guy, huge guy. In a heavyweight matchup, goes up against Joe Joyce for the WBO interim heavyweight title.
Rematch.
This is a rematch, right? I was going to say, yeah, this is a rematch. Joyce lost the first fight. Yeah, that's right. That was a big deal. So do you see something in relation to Eubank Smith here where Joyce comes back, gets the win?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because I want to say yes, because Joe Joyce comes across like such a nice guy, and in all of his performances before this, you know, he kind of looked unstoppable. But then just the performance that he gave against Zhang, like he was just eating those jabs time after time after time, and there was literally no head movement at all. And he just, you know, just couldn't get out of the way. He really could not get out of the way of Zhang. So it's kind of like, okay, like, is he going to be able to get that much movement into him in these last few months, you know, before he fights? And, I'm gonna back him because he's a Brit, and I'm going to go with, yes, he does. That was just a bad performance that night. And then that was the reason they ended up getting stopped, obviously, you know, due to the eye injury. And I'm going to say that he comes back. Salah gets him in there, lots of movement, and he, you know, he manages to get the victory, and it's going to be the other way around this time. I think he manages to stop Zhang. How confident am I of that?
Tell me.
60%.
Uh-oh.
Because it just to get that much movement, you know, in him after he's been so static this entire time, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, but back a Brit. Let's go.
Back a Brit. Yep. BB. And also Saturday, the 30th of September, at the end of this month, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Showtime pay-per-view, Saul Canelo Alvarez goes up against Jermell Charlo for the undisputed super middleweight titles. Jermell will be going into the ring as a undisputed champion, technically, but as soon as the bell rings, the WBO has already announced that they will strip him of the title. Is it really a undisputed versus undisputed, or just for the marketing? It works out. But the interesting part about the date for this fight is that when's the last time that Canelo's fought outside of Mexican Independence Weekend in September? You know, when's the last time boxing hasn't had that weekend? I think doesn't UFC have that weekend this month?
Right.
When is the last time that's happened?
See, we posted about that when the UFC announced it. We posted that on the Twitter. Like, are they going to go up against them? You know, are we going to see boxing up against the huge, huge company that is the UFC? And no. Obviously, the answer was no. You know, Canelo chose to go 2 weeks after. You know, obviously, this fight you just mentioned against Charlo. So many years, dude. Back to what? Floyd, before Floyd, Oscar. It's been, I couldn't even tell you. We'd have to do some research to find out.
This is a big deal.
Yeah, is that it? Is the UFC that big, that popular that have we now lost it to them? You know, is it going to be no more, you know, Mexican Independence Day weekend fights? That's going to be interesting because that's huge for boxing. It's a huge loss.
Yeah. I mean, we never know. Next year it might go back on the same pathway. But yeah, this is the streak is over. The streak is over.
Because obviously it's a huge question, and I'm sure, you know, me and you probably can't answer it, because when Canelo goes, who takes it over? Who takes that mantle from, you know, Oscar to Floyd, Floyd to Canelo?
Oh, yeah. If you think about it, there's nobody right now who can take that marquee star mantle that Canelo currently holds.
I'll give you two. See what you think. Ryan Garcia, Gervonta Davis.
I think they're the closest. I think they're the closest, but yeah, I think they're the closest. And I think Ryan Garcia, I'm telling you, if he could just win and like really find that skill, that, you know, that talent, obviously he's a talented kid, but you know, his hype and popularity exceeds his talent. But if he can, he could be a superstar, man, because he's crossed over into the mainstream, into that TikTok social media era. And especially with Jake Paul and Logan Paul and all these influencers and all that who are in the fight game and kind of associating their brands with boxing, Garcia is in that same realm. He's just an actual professional fighter. I mean, Jake Paul, you know, he's giving it a shot. It's working out for him. But I'm telling you, I think if Ryan Garcia can like actually keep winning and, you know, find a rhythm, he can be way bigger than Tank Davis. You know, I mean, look at that's why they fought. You know, look at the pay-per-views and the reported pay-per-views, even though there was like three different reports that we saw. But either way, the fight did well. It seemed like it sold a really good number. There was a lot of popularity behind it. A lot of people were talking about it. Garcia can get that section of the audience that's huge, that Hollywood audience. He can get that Hollywood audience, you know? Whereas right now, I think Tank, in terms of selling out arenas, all that, he's obviously got the resume, but I'm telling you, Ryan Garcia has that Hollywood connection. He has that Hollywood connection where he had, you know, he influencers, TikTok, and that next generation of fans, especially with Ryan Garcia being what, 25, maybe 26, 25 years old. He's still got a ton of years. As long as he can win, man, as long as he can win and get like some, become a world champion, like legitimate world champion, no interim or whatever. He could be a superstar, but you know, there's behavior problems, there's promoter problems, and his team, like, you know, there's just too much drama around him. So who knows? But I think you're right. I think the closest right now would be Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis. They'd be the closest to, and I don't even think they're that close to Canelo. Like, in terms of taking over the mantle like that, they're not. Like, but they would, if you had to pick, I think they would be the closest in terms of taking over. But yeah, but you're right. We don't, there's not like a, you know, it's been years. You know, we had Tyson. If you want to maybe throw Chavez in there, Chavez had a big popularity. Then you had De La Hoya for so many years. Then you had Mayweather and Pacquiao at the same time. Then you had Canelo. And, but you could always see who the next guy who was coming behind them. You could see it, like, oh, even Mayweather, when he beat Canelo, he even said in the post fight with Canelo, he said, this is your guy. This is the next guy after me. When I leave the sport, he's like, this is the guy. And he, I mean, obviously he was right. I mean, Canelo was already a star by then, but you know, he's been the guy ever since. So you're right. There's nobody right now to take over the mantle. There's not. So it's kind of up for grabs to see who gets it, you know? But yeah, that's definitely interesting to see. Also on that T-Mobile card in Las Vegas in the co-main, Yordanis Ugas former welterweight world champion, goes up against Mario Barrios for the WBC interim welterweight title. That's a pretty interesting matchup. I think Ugas beats him, just that Cuban slick style. But, you know, we'll preview that as it gets closer. But that's a pretty interesting matchup for both of them, kind of like a crossroads fight. But I think Ugas beats him. On October 7th from the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield on DAZN, Lee Wood and Josh Warrington in it. This is a rematch, right? For the WBA featherweight world title. That's going to be an interesting fight as well. And then also just recently announced October 21st from the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California on DAZN, in a battle of Southern California and rising welterweight contenders. Alexis Rocha of Santa Ana, California goes up against Giovanni Santillan. So this is a Golden Boy versus Top Rank matchup here. Santillan has been on the show before, so has Rocha. So if you guys want to go back through our catalog, listen to the episodes they've been on. Giovanni Santillan he came up with Thompson's Boxing Promotions, and then Top Rank got associated with him. So I think this is for where they at in the welterweight division, and Crawford and Spence and all these guys are on the other side of the street, or they're kind of wrapped up. I like this fight a lot. I know that each of their profiles aren't as big, you know, obviously as Spence, Crawford, and those guys, but for a Southern California fight and for hardcore boxing fans, especially in the California, Southern California area, I like this fight a lot. I think it's going to be very interesting. And I'm very interested to see how, because the Kia Forum holds what? Like 18,000?
Must be something like that. Yeah, I would say it must be around there.
I'm interested to see how they sell it. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, yeah, because obviously you've got a lot of the big American sports going on, you know, during that time period, so.
Football's back.
Yeah.
American football.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, but it's a good fight. You've got to give props to both guys to face someone, you know, they're both kind of like up and coming in the welterweight division, and instead of kind of treading water and fighting people of no real note, that they were like, hey, fuck it, let's fight each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're trying to stay active, you know. I get it, yeah. I'm looking forward to that fight. And also on the 25th of November, from the 3 Arena in Dublin on DAZN, Chantel Cameron goes up against Katie Taylor in a rematch for the Undisputed Super Lightweight titles. And then also December 16th from the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona on DAZN, Jesse Bam Rodriguez, 18-0, goes up against Sonny Edwards, 20-0 for the IBF and WBO flyweight championships of the world. This is one of those fights for the hardcore boxing fan. Like everybody wants, like, this is a fight. This is a fight.
On that list you just read, I'm going to go, in terms of anticipation, that's my top one.
Really?
Yep. I think that one, then maybe Canelo, and then maybe Rocha Santillan.
Yeah.
And that's just because we're Southern California guys, so I'm sure to everybody else that Rocha Giovanni fight is probably nowhere near, but because we...
No, yeah, because we're Southern California guys, obviously. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. If you ask somebody in England or in the UK, they'd probably say, oh, I want to see Lee Wood and Josh Warrington. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, I could agree with that. I don't know. That Rocha Santillan fight on DAZN, I'm very interested to see that. Like, you know, and Canelo, obviously, Canelo fights, you're always interested, and Charlo's moving up in weight. He's, you know, that's very intriguing too. But that Rocha Santillan fight, I'm very interested in that. Cause you're right. Like, there are two guys, like, hey, you know, like, they're just gonna go up against each other. Like, hey, let's fight each other. Like, we can't fight these other guys. Like, you know, let's see who moves on from us. Mm. But that Jesse Rodriguez, Sonny Edwards, that's really, yeah. We got a good schedule in the next couple months, and there probably, you know, there's going to be more fights added to the schedule. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to see all these fights in the next couple months, and we'll have more fill in as the days progress forward. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Shakur Stevenson and Frank Martin. This is another fight that I hope comes to fruition. So it seems like it's going that direction. Have agreed to a deal for a lightweight title fight. Or actually, it's a lightweight fight. I don't think it's a title fight. That will take place November 16th, reportedly, in Las Vegas. Or in December, on December 9th in New York, according to ESPN. So this is another cross-promotional fight. We talked about Rocha Santillan, top rank, Golden Boy. This is top rank in PBC. So
you were correct. It was ordered by the WBC. So it's going to be for the WBC strap because it looks like Devin Haney's moving up to 140 to fight Regis Progre. So these guys will be fighting for the vacant 135-pound WBC strap. Yeah.
You know what? I'm sure that's how... You know, that was a big negotiation point, and that's maybe what got Al Haymon and PBC to, I mean, who knows if they wanted Martin or not, but that's how this fight got over the line. Like, hey, if the WBC mandates it, not mandates it, if they say, if Haney vacates the title and the WBC says, hey, this vacant title between Stevenson and Martin, I feel like that's a pretty good leverage point to be like, hey, look, this is an opportunity. If you win, you get the title and you bring it back to us, and vice versa with Stevenson and all that. So, yeah, I got to give it to both promoters if this comes to fruition. You know, this is a pretty interesting fight. I still think Stevenson wins. I think a lot of people are going to pick Stevenson, but Frank Martin's a good opponent to have, you know.
So just listen to this, right? So the same as you, I think Shakur Stevenson wins this. He'll be 21-0, and he'll be featherweight, super featherweight, and then lightweight world champion in 21 fights.
And he's still growing. He's still growing. He's still growing.
He's 26.
Yeah, he's still growing. So, yeah, I mean... I hope this finalizes. So far, it seems like it is, but I hope this finalizes. So, like we talked about, Devin Haney seems like he vacated, and he's going to move up to 140 pounds, maybe to fight Regis Progre. That seems like it's still in the works, so that could be made before the end of the year. But yeah, I think they're going to really try to schedule this fight. Because in Las Vegas around that time, I think is it October or November, they're going to have that F1, that Formula One Grand Prix in Las Vegas, which is a big deal. That's a big deal over there.
November, I think.
Yeah, so I think they're going to try to capitalize on that crowd and everything who's there, because, I mean, it's smart. Smart strategy. I mean, you got to give it to Top Rank. Top Rank does a really good job of looking at events like that, associated events, to try to schedule it in association. They do a really good job with that. So, yeah, I hope this comes to be finalized, because I'm looking forward to this fight. And then also, Top Rank has sent an official request to the WBO in hopes of naming a junior welterweight champion in Teofimo Lopez as the organization's super champion. So they want to elevate him, essentially. And a super champion, for people who don't know, provides the fighter with special privileges under the WBO rules and guidelines. One of the press officers for the WBO told ESPN that the super champion designation is a status granted to those fighters whose professional merits and accomplishments satisfy the criteria set forth in the relevant provision. End quote. That press officer also said that it is not a title, but rather a status, which grants the recipient certain rights considering his accomplishments. So it's a political way to say, hey, this status gives us a little bit more leeway to kind of make some moves in regards to the navigation of the career. That's pretty much what it is. It's just a political move. So it's been around for a long time. It doesn't seem like it's going away. So I feel like WBO, Top Rank, they've had a close association for a while. It looks like this is gonna end up coming to fruition. And then also big news that happened. We talked about the Eubank and Smith fight and how Chris Eubank Jr. had BOMAC, Brian McIntyre, the trainer of Terrence Crawford, in this fight as his trainer. Well, unfortunately for BOMAC, he was arrested this past Sunday on charges of attempting to board a plane from the UK to the United States with a firearm in his checked luggage, according to police over there. It was in Manchester. So the 53-year-old McIntyre was arrested in Manchester Airport one day after the fight between Eubank and Smith. Obviously, there's been a debate online, boxing Twitter and all that, about this. The police did release a statement and said that BOMAC is charged with possession of a firearm and possession of ammunition for a firearm without a certificate. And he's still in custody. And I think I saw that his court date isn't until like October, the beginning of October. So Mike, for people in the United States over here, our listeners who are outside of the UK, who aren't familiar with the gun laws over there, what are we looking at here? How does this work?
Well, from what I've read when I did some research, you're looking at potentially 5 years in jail for possession of a firearm with ammunition, and the chances of him getting a visa to be able to work with any fighters in the UK, I think, is going to be pretty remote going forward. From what the rumor is he managed to get to the UK on a private chartered flight. That's why she...
We haven't seen any official report of that, right? We've just seen kind of some chatter about that. Did he go on a private plane?
Yeah, supposedly he went on a private plane to the UK and then for some reason was getting a commercial flight, if that's right, home. And that's why he ended up in the, you know, like that.
Do you think that they'll give him like a pass for that or no? Like how strict are they over there from you growing up over there, obviously, and being from over there, like how serious is this? Is there any chance that he maybe pays a fine and they let him go? Or is this, I mean, based on what the potential discipline could be, this is pretty serious.
I mean, obviously the gun laws in the UK are super strict, you know, compared to the US. And I think that's maybe at times people don't understand that, you know, obviously traveling to different countries that are, you know, they're not as lenient and stuff like that. So unfortunately having no knowledge of it or something like that is it's not good enough. You know, when you go to another country, you have to abide by their laws. So unfortunately for, you know, BOMAC, he's come unstuck this time round, and, you know, hopefully it's something he looks at, you know, in the future. You can't just...
Do you think he knew? Like, do you think he's going to... I feel like his legal team or whoever, like, they're going to obviously say, hey, look, like, he came over here and they didn't tell him he had the gun already, and you guys nobody told him anything. Do you think they're going to try to say, like, oh, you know, what's that saying, like, where you kind of play dumb, or you just kind of like, hey, like, I didn't know, you know, I wasn't aware of the laws or the regulations.
They didn't, it's, he chose to travel there.
No, right. But I mean, like, how likely do you think it's him saying, like, hey, look, I came over here and, you know, they didn't tell me anything. The TSA in the United States, the Transportation Security Agency, didn't tell me anything when they saw I was going to the UK. It was on my boarding pass or my ticket or whatever. And then when I got to the UK, they, you know, they have my luggage there and they didn't tell me anything. Like, maybe he assumed, like, oh, I thought I could because you guys didn't tell me anything. Like, how far is that going to get him?
In my opinion, absolutely nowhere. Because
really,
being dumb to a law is your fault.
Because
when you step into a country, I don't think they have the time and the resources to explain all the laws that you may not know, unfortunately.
I saw a report that he's been mugged in the past in the UK. And that's why, I don't know, maybe that's, I don't know, who knows, that's the reason he brought the weapon, but...
He's been there, what, once before for Terrence Crawford fight when he went to Scotland and Crawford beat Ricky Burns.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if that's the only time or not, but yeah, I mean, just imagine he gets, I saw that there was a report that it's a minimum of 5 years in prison over there.
That's what I heard today. Yeah. I heard that. I mean, he's a celebrity of sorts, right. And I'm sure that he won't get that. I'm sure he'll probably get some sort of fine, maybe like community service, and they'll say, hey, unfortunately, you can't come to the UK anymore for X amount of time due to the fact that this was found in your...
Does Terence Crawford go to the White House to have President Joe Biden step in or something? You never know.
I mean, I don't think, unless Eubank fights in the UK and Eubank decides to stay with Bomac, which Eubank has had more coaches than me and you've had hot dinners.
That's true.
I don't think Crawford needs to go to the UK for any upcoming fights. Most people at 147 and 154, there isn't too many Brits. So I think it's not really going to affect him too much. Maybe if Eubank stays with him and, you know, we have the Eubank Ben fight and that lands in the UK, obviously he could come a cropper there, I guess. But, we'll see. You know, the laws are completely different, Danny, for me and you compared to celebrities. So,
I mean, just imagine, though. Just imagine if he gets, like, convicted and they stick to the rules over there and, oh, yeah, you're going to get 5 years. That's insane. Right when your fighter is on the high of his life, like your main fighter is on the high of his life and he's, like, one of the guys in the sport, mainstream, and he's crossing over, like, enough. And you get locked up in another country. It's not even your country for multiple years because you did this. Like, damn, what a turn of events that would be. Who knows what's going to happen here, but I feel like, I don't know, maybe Terence Crawford is using his leverage as an athlete behind the scenes to talk to certain people like, hey, you guys have helped me out. Like, I mean, that's what anybody would do, right? Yeah. I'm interested to see how this works out. Cause obviously, at least me, we're familiar with the U.S. law and the U.S. legal system over here. But according to all these reports and everything, the U.K. over there is pretty strict with guns and weapons. So, yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see how this. And he's remanded in custody until the beginning of October, which is his next scheduled date. So he's going to be in there for like another month. So that's insane. And also, as part of a court settlement, the WBA Championships Committee has reinstated Mahmoud Char. I never say his first name right. He's a heavyweight. He's been around for a long time. They reinstated Char as the regular champion of the organization's heavyweight division. The agreement reached, which puts an end to a long dispute brought by Char and his team, will allow the WBA to close this chapter, settling a dispute that has been going on for more than a year. After the fight in which Usyk defeated Daniel Dubois, the Ukrainian had remained the only heavyweight champion. However, the organization is forced to make the decision to reinstate Char as regular champion in order to continue with the normal operation of the body. Char lost his status as a champion in recess in December of 2021 after not having fought in the scheduled time and after the impossibility of agreeing to a fight with Trevor Bryan. And after 2 years and the judicial process in between, the WBA has decided to reinstate the regular champion status to the boxer. So he pretty much pushed them and like called their bluff and threw the book at them. And they're, you know, obviously they thought like, oh yeah, we'll just take his title away and try to move it somewhere else. And he pushed and pushed and, you know, it worked out for him, right?
Yeah. And the WBA forced Char to face Jarrell Big Baby Miller. He has to face Jarrell Big Baby Miller before October the 14th.
That's insane. So there's another fight that's going to be added to the schedule. I mean, I can see that happening, especially for Jarrell Miller. He would love this opportunity.
To then get in a shot at a type of heavyweight championship is, We said it at the time. He'll come back. You always get a second chance, a third chance, a fourth chance.
Yeah, that's insane.
Boxing for some reason.
That's insane. So for once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. We apologize for the some weeks without episodes and some weeks with episodes. We're trying to align some scheduling conflicts that we've had. And then also it's been a little bit more difficult the last couple of weeks to solidify some guests just because of the schedule conflicts. So we're really trying. We're talking to some people. We just have to get them on the calendar to jump on the show. But before we sign off, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be looking forward to the Top Rank show with Luis Alberto Lopez against Joette Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, that crept up, huh? That's going to be there. That's going to be an interesting fight. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.